All right, Alexander. I think this is an interesting topic for us to discuss. And it comes from an article that Eric Zeus wrote. I believe he wrote it for the Durant exclusively. I don't know if he published it anywhere else. But as I was reading this article, I thought this could be a really interesting discussion that we could have. It revolves around the Skripals, Sergei and Yulia Skripal. We did a video on this about, like to say, maybe 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
There was news from the Sunday Telegraph, I think.
Was it the Times?
From one of those UK Sunday newspapers. But they said that the Skripals had been relocated to New Zealand, and they're now living there in peace in New Zealand under new identities, and they're enjoying themselves. And that's the end of the whole Skripal affair. That's what we're led to believe. But Eric Zeus questions a lot of that, and rightly so. Rightly so, and he presents a very, very detailed and very good argument as to why the Skripals are most likely not in New Zealand. And not only that, he questions if the Skripals are even alive. And the title of his article is, "Were the Skripals Secretly Executed by Britain's Government?" And that caught my attention. It caught your attention. And it works a lot off of a book that John Helmer also wrote. And Alexander, I'd like you to get into this story. Great article from Eric. I will put a link for that article in the description box down below. And a very detailed book from John Helmer as well that tackles this question. What happened to Sergei and Yulia Skripal?
I mean, can I just say, first of all, in relation to Eric Zeus, I should say that he is an exceptionally thorough and detailed scholar. He writes extensively on many subjects and always writes very carefully and very well. So he's a very balanced person. And John Helmer is the longest, he's the longest serving Russia watcher, anybody knows. And he knows the sort of Russian world incredibly well. So we're talking about two people with a lot of background and authority and expertise in this subject. Now, what the point that both of them are making is that basically no part of what has been said about the two Skripals, Sergei Skripal, the Russian who'd spied for Britain and who was allowed by the Russians to come to Britain, and then who was in March 2018 subjected to this mysterious attack, if it was an attack, and whatever it was, in March 2018 in Salisbury, which has been so much in the media, and his niece, Yulia, who was also found with him in a bench in the city of Salisbury in England. And, they've both been basically vanished since. But the story is that they were poisoned by the Russian Secret Service with Novichok poison. And we've had all this huge story that the British have run about, James Bond stuff, basically, about it with, evil Russians and mysterious agents coming from the Kremlin to poison Sergei Skripal. Never quite clear why they would want to do that, by the way, but that's always been the story. Anyway, the point that Zeus and Helmer are making is that this story doesn't really add up very well. Anyway, we've pointed in other programs to the gaps in this story. But what Zeus is homing in on and what Helmer is homing in on, and Zeus is talking about in this article, is one very specific point which should cause great concern. And that is the welfare of these two people at the heart of this story. Sergei Skripal and Yulia Skripal have, to all intents and purposes, disappeared. They haven't been seen since 2018. Sergei Skripal has not been seen and has not said anything in public since since this attack on him. We've no actual physical picture of him at all. Yulia Skripal has published some statements, gave what I thought was a very creepy and strange video, which Zeus talks about in this article, in which she basically says, that she's very shocked, very troubled, wants one day to return to Russia. which is interesting. But she says that, you know, seems very bewildered. At least the words suggest that she's very bewildered about what had happened to her. But the point about the video is it's incredibly stilted. It's clearly very controlled by the British authorities. And that is the last public sighting of her. And Eric Zeus and John Helmer have pointed out that the British were misleading about the whereabouts of this video. The British authorities said it happened in London. John Helmer says it actually happened in a military base outside London. But regardless of that, the fact is they seem to have vanished. Now, a few weeks ago, we had the story that they were in New Zealand with new identities. I have to say, the New Zealand authorities have cast doubt on that. They don't seem to know very much about this, and they don't seem to be very happy about the fact that they've been connected to the Skripals in this way. So where are these people? Now, I find this all very strange. And why not at least have them interviewed? Why not have, what doesn't have to disclose their location if there were genuine concerns about their welfare and their safety? But, you know, you could find a reliable journalist to interview them and ask them questions in a safe location and do so in a way that, you know, reassured people that these two people are alive and well and are able to communicate. But that hasn't happened. And when two people disappear like this, and they have disappeared, that really does beg questions. So I have to say, I personally would find it very, very difficult to accept without proof that the British authorities have executed them. I'm not going to go there. That's Eric Zeus says that in his title. That's his statement. I find that very difficult. But when two people disappear, it is entirely unsurprising that people say those sort of things and ask those kind of questions. And one does have to wonder, even if they are not executed, are they alive? If they are alive, what sort of condition are they in?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the article really hit home for me, Alexander, with a couple of things that Zeus wrote. And I really liked his writing style in this article.
Absolutely.
Because he humanized Yulia, especially Yulia.
Absolutely.
Number one, Yulia was very close to her family in Russia. I believe it's her cousin, Victoria.
That's right.
Victoria Skripal, who misses her.
That's right.
Victoria Skripal misses her, and she was outside the UK embassy in Moscow, you know, pleading for the UK government to give her some insight as to where Yulia is, what's happened to her. She's disappeared. Yulia used to always be in touch with Victoria. Also, the Skripals as a family would always call Sergei's would always call his mother, and Yulia would always call her grandmother Russia every week. Just stopped. The other thing that was surprising was that Yulia was engaged to be married. And that just ended. No one ever tells you any of this stuff that has happened, and all of a sudden she's been disappeared. I mean, this is like a human rights violation. If I've ever seen one, this is it. And very quickly, Alexander, I have it highlighted here in the article, the last insight and communication we had from Yulia was a handwritten statement that Reuters published, but Eric makes a great point in saying that this handwritten statement was published as a PDF, like a photograph. It wasn't transcribed. It wasn't put electronic format. It can't be scanned. It can't be searched. It just kind of put it up there, and that was that. Eric, give credit to him, Eric Zeus actually transcribes that letter and puts it on this article. Yulia wrote that letter in English and in Russian. Eric puts the English version of that letter for the first time. It's on the internet, and you can copy and paste it, and you can search for it and index it and all kinds of things. So good on him for that. Alexander, what do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, you're absolutely right. They do first of all come across as real human beings. I mean, Sergei Skripal, despite, you know, his history, his complex history as an intelligence agent, firstly for the Russians, then for the British spying on the Russians and all that, he seems to be very close to his family. And that has obviously ended. And Yulia Skripal, as you rightly said, that's ended also. This seems extremely strange. I mean, and very, very, very worrying. And ask yourself this question. If this had happened to two American citizens or two British citizens, let's say in a country with which Britain and the United States are not on sympathetic terms, let's say it happened in Russia, or let's say it happened in China, or let's say it happened somewhere else, you know, maybe, you know, a less threatening country in some ways. Imagine what British and American people would say if two of their citizens were disappeared in this fashion, if all communications from them were stopped, and if all the only visible picture of one of them was this extraordinary, stilted, very controlled video of Yulia Skripal in an extraordinarily mysterious location. I mean, people would be outraged, and rightly so. And we should be outraged about this, because it does beg questions about human rights. Now, can I say something about what Eric Zeus has done, which is incredibly useful, about, you know, transcribing this statement? I think the reason the British authorities don't want that statement published or widely circulated is because, though I think every single word in that statement was carefully negotiated between Yulia Skripal and the British authorities, Yulia Skripal was nonetheless able to say in that statement, probably as a condition of saying a statement at all, the British were under a great deal of pressure at that time to produce her, but that she was nonetheless able to say certain things which I think they didn't like. And I'll say what they were. Firstly, she expresses her complete incredulity about the attack. Incredulity to the point of disbelief. Secondly, she thanks the Russian embassy for its efforts to contact her. And thirdly, she expresses a wish to return to her own country, which is Russia. So I don't think the British particularly want the world, or most people, to see those things, which is why they've made this statement so difficult to access by keeping it as a PDF, which can't be transcribed or cut and pasted easily. So, you know, again, Eric has done a great service doing this for us. And he's to be commended for it. But it's a very, very interesting statement. It's clearly been, as I said, very negotiated. The British perhaps didn't get everything that they wanted from it. They certainly didn't get the angry denunciation of the Kremlin that perhaps they would have liked. And that may explain why we've never heard from her since.
Yeah, I find the fact that the Russian embassy was cut out of this very, very disturbing. I don't know what to say about that. It's really disturbing that the Russian embassy couldn't come to the aid of their own citizen.
Well, indeed.
I draw some parallels to what they did with Assange, what they're doing with Assange as well, where we're seeing that the Australian embassy, for various reasons, is not coming to the aid of an Australian citizen as well. So, I mean, it's just really disturbing to see, you know, governments kind of acting outside of international law and international norms. But going back to the article, let me read you a paragraph that Eric makes as to where Yulia really was when she was making these statements. She was not in London. And Eric says that on the 8th of December, 2019, the Australian and American independent investigative journalist John Helmer, who reports from Moscow, published an article that conclusively located where Yulia had been speaking from in that video. He headlined there, the Skripals under U.S. control at a USAF nuclear bomber base in Fairford, Gloucestershire. And he provided solid documentation that video was filmed at that location, which wasn't in London. So the handling of the Skripals, and this is the key line, the handling of the Skripals is both a UK government and a US government deception operation. What do you make of that paragraph, Alexander?
This is incredibly interesting. And I'm going to ask a good question. Does the President of the United States know about this? Has the United States President Donald Trump been briefed about this? It is known that he was told things by the CIA about the Skripal affair, which are not true. He was told, for example, that children had been poisoned. And he was told that by Gina Haspel, who was the CIA director. There was attempts to sort of row back on that and to pretend that she didn't actually say this to him and that he wasn't tricked as a result into expelling large numbers of Russian diplomats, which he was persuaded to do against his best judgment. But does he know about this? Is he fully informed about all of the steps that have been taken in relation to the Skripals in this affair? And who else in the United States knows?
I agree with you. Let me read you the final two paragraphs of this story that we'll go over, and I'd like your comment on this. If Yulia and Sergei have both been executed by Britain's government, then the Times publication of an undocumented allegation by UK's government that they had instead both been sent to New Zealand and given new identities there is a convenient way for UK's government to avoid ever needing to face the public after having continually lied to the public by blaming Russia's government for the poisonings that had happened to both the father and the daughter. If the Skripals have been provided new identities and sent to live in New Zealand, will they be freed from Britain's imprisonment of them? Will, for example, they finally be freed from the condition that neither Sergei nor Yulia are free to use a computer with internet access to communicate? And will they be free to, for example, read newspapers and other media that are accessible online? Or will they be in the protective custody of the UK government? Or will it then be the New Zealand government? And will they be able to, for example, to resume living? And maybe, if they wish, to write and publish books about what they can recollect about what has happened to them after the 4th of March 2018. Will the UK's government want that to happen? Will the UK's government, which has lied about so much, be comfortable about returning the Skripals freedom, or will it instead continue, quote, protecting them? Makes perfect sense. If they are in New Zealand, can they get on the internet? Can they make a phone call? Can they read the news? Can they talk to a reporter?
Well, indeed. Can I just say, I'm not going to assume that the British government has executed these people without evidence. I mean, that's not something I'm going to do. That's going too far for me at the moment. But every other point Eric makes is absolutely spot on. If these people are being protected and are free, then that freedom must mean that they have a right to their private lives. That is a legal right, by the way. If we're talking about Britain, it is a legal right enshrined in British law, provided for by Article 8 of the European Convention of Human Rights. Having a private life means an ability to communicate with people, to correspond, to say what you think on the internet, to publish things under your own name, to travel to various places, to go to other countries, to go, in fact, to your home country, Russia, if that is what you want to do. If they are not able to do those things, then their human rights are being deprived. They're being taken from them because those are rights that they are being prevented from exercising. So we have to be absolutely clear. What has happened to these two people should be a matter of serious concern to anybody who is concerned about human rights and about the welfare of these two people. I don't know what's happened to them. I very much doubt, by the way, that they are in New Zealand. I mean, the New Zealand authorities have been extremely gone out of their way, it seems to me, to pour cold water on that story. And I don't believe that they're in New Zealand. I don't know where they are. I don't know what's become of them. I don't know whether they're alive or not. But I think we're owed an explanation as to what has become of these people. And if, as I devoutly hope, they are alive, they should be produced and able to speak finally for themselves. Tell us what happened to them in Salisbury. Communicate with their families. Speak to Sergei Skripal's father, Yulia's grandmother, their cousins, her fiance, all of those people. Tell us what took place. Tell us what they want to think, what their own views of these events are, what their own views about other events are. They've committed no crime that we know of. Why are they being treated in this way?
Yeah, what's the crime that they've committed exactly?
Exactly. Hmm.
Especially Yulia.
Especially Yulia, well, who just happened
to be Sergei. Okay, he was a double agent, fine. Yeah. But Yulia committed no crime whatsoever.
No crime at all. I mean, she just happened to be in the wrong place. That's the only thing she's ever done. So, yeah, let's know more about these people and this refusal of the British government to have any kind of communication or discussion or explanation about their whereabouts. And, you know, these, you know, off stage whisperings to certain newspapers, Sunday newspapers, actually they're in New Zealand or they're off to Canada or they're in the United States or they're in a safe house somewhere. That is not acceptable. That is simply not acceptable behavior. And by the way, a couple of weeks ago, I read a story in the British media about a letter that Sergei Skripal is supposed to have sent to someone in Russia. Well, again, letters letters can be written by all sorts of people. Let's see him. Let him speak out.
Yeah. Let 2020, him, let, and we're talking exactly, about letters.
Exactly. Well, quite letters. And let them give them the freedom that all human beings deserve to communicate freely with the world. And don't tell me that this has been done for their protection, when there are so many ways of protecting people, which doesn't involve imprisoning them, which is what has happened.
Does the Russian government know where they are?
Yes, I'm sure it does.
Why are they playing along with this?
Well, because as far as I can see, it works to their advantage. I mean, let's say this. I mean, the Russian government comes along and says, we happen to know that Sergei and Yulia Skripal are in, somewhere in England, and they say where it is. The British will just deny it. They'll just say it isn't true. So what would the Russians achieve by that? The only way that the Russians can win this argument is by either doing one of two things, either arranging for Sergei and Yulia to return to Russia and putting them on Russian television. That doesn't seem very likely. Or just allowing the situation to continue and seeing British credibility drain away, which is what's happening.
You know, when I watch movies about kidnappings or abductions, these big Hollywood blockbusters, I think actually there is a movie with this exact title. People always ask for proof of life for the person that's been abducted. Actually, I think there really is a movie called Proof of Life.
Yeah.
And, I would like to see Proof of Life.
Yes, well, I mean, can I just make I would like to see Proof of Life, but I mean, can I just make a further point? I mean, keeping people isolated from their families indefinitely, preventing them from communicating with the outside world, that is a great cruelty in itself, which we mustn't forget. So if they're dead, that's terrible. If they're imprisoned in the way that we've been talking about in this program, that's also terrible. There is a huge deprivation of people's human rights. And what have these people done? You don't just disappear people. Not in law-abiding democracies, if that's what Britain is. And this is my own country, Britain. And I care about these things. I mean, I believe in the rule of law. I believe in human rights, you know, the rights under the convention, because they're part of our law. And, you know, we should see them effective. I believe in international law too, by the way. And the Russian consulate has a right, it seems to me, to have contact with its citizens.
Doesn't Sergei Skripal and Yulia Skripal have a right to legal representation? Or didn't Absolutely. They have a right? I mean, was there ever any legal representation afforded them?
There's never been any legal representation afforded them at any time, at least none that we know of, whether they've even been provided with any kind of legal advice. None that we know of.
It's a very, very strange story. No one talks about it.
No.
Anyway, all right. I'll put a link for that article once again in the description box. Alexander Mercurs, thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Smash that like. Drop us a comment down below as well. Go to Patreon, PayPal, Subscribestar. Please donate to the channel. Your donation really helps us out a lot. And go to the Durant Shop. Pick up some of our new magic mugs. Alexander has them right
Indeed.
There.
Two countries, by the way, which, I mean, we've been talking about them in our program and talking about something that has been done wrong, but which I am, you know, Britain is my home country. You see a Durant mug now with the British flag, and the United States, which is a country that I greatly admire. And here they are. We've got magic mugs with the two flags of these two countries, and they are just amazing. They look phenomenal, and you will find other mugs with other countries' flags also, not just these. These are the 15-ounce mugs. We also now do 11-ounce mugs, and this one is of my original home country, Greece, with the Greek flag. And in every case, you see there's the double-headed eagle of the Durant, which is our very own double-headed eagle, by the way. It's not like anybody else's. It's not like the Habsburg one or the Russian one or the Byzantine one. It's our very own. And it's the double-headed eagle, which looks in all directions, east and west, and keeps a track of all that's going on. But these are amazing mugs. I've spoken of them about many times. You can see the difference in size. This is perhaps a mug for a really potent drink, really strong coffee. I make, by the way, exceptionally strong coffee, but then I can drink it from a big mug too. But you know, if you want the smaller mug and drink it in a more measured way, well, you can do it. And you can also drink other things. I mean, no doubt you could have liqueurs or you know, strong spirits, but be careful, you know, how strong your drink is. But anyway, they are amazing mugs. They're practically indestructible. They're incredibly stylish. They don't crack, chip, flake, or discolor. I should know. I've had my other mugs now for a year and 10 months, and they're all in perfect condition. And they keep your coffee, your tea, your hot chocolate, your cocoa, all hot. And they keep your beer, champagne, or whatever, ice cold for long periods of time because they're so well made. And you can find lots of other great new mugs like this in our shop also. We have lots of other great things in our shop too. We've got shirts, we've got polo shirts and long sleeve shirts and short sleeve shirts and V-neck shirts, all 100% cotton, all beautifully made. Alex is expanding our range of shirts also. And we've also got, of course, hats, hoodies and stickers too, and ebooks. You can find them all in our shop. You support the Durant by coming to our shop and buying these great things. And you'll be the great owner of these great things when you buy them. And if anybody wants to suggest more flags, more nation flags for us, they're welcome to do that. So come to our shop. Buy these great things, support the Durant, and Alex will tell you how.
You'll find the link to the Durant shop in the description box down below. Alexander Mercurs, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.